Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station. Good afternoon and welcome to the Home Run. It's Monday and it was supposed to be full of energy, but Dwight likes Monday. I don't. And, excuse me. Welcome back. Just had to take a slight one. It's Monday and we have a lot of things going on in the world. And of course, it's your drive time show this time of the day. We still have you covered into one of those exciting company, exciting topics that makes us, that makes you enjoy our company that is, for this time of the day. And, you know, technology was advancing, right? And we are thinking, man, we are coming together. Man, we are making life easy. Man, we are coming together to get to know each other culturally, economically, you know, exchanging knowledge and doing business and, you know, doing business and philosophy and all those things. It was all good. Until you realize that, you know, our interconnectedness, well, like, as in everything else, has its own pros and cons. And one of those pros and cons is into a way that our economies have been interconnected. Now, because if the economies are too interconnected, basically the global economy, the direction where we're headed, it's interconnected right now, but the global economy, the direction where we're headed is, the global economy is, if we continue at this trend, that is until Donald Trump, you know, came in with his whole new economic wisdom and caused disruptions in pretty much every direction. And I still don't subscribe to the idea that Donald Trump is this mindless guy that has no clue what he's doing. First of all, he's a billionaire. He's a businessman. So, he may have started his business with a small, small loan of $1 million from his father. Wish we all had a chance, you know, that opportunity. I mean, one of the reasons why rich people and poor people will never understand each other. They're wildly different. They may all have two legs and 32 teeth, but they're wildly different. Can you imagine your friend telling you that his biggest struggle is having to borrow $1 million from his father? Now, for you to borrow $1 million from your father, first of all, your father must have more than $1 million. So, that's a whole different discussion. So, on the interconnectedness, it was a good thing to celebrate and know that, okay, you know what, our interconnectedness will make life easier in more ways than one. And in terms of sharing knowledge, that led obviously to the technological advancement. And I don't know if you know this, but gunpowder was, borrowed, without permission from the Chinese by some people I won't mention. So, the global village, the interconnectedness have come with a lot of advantages, which we have all started basically to embrace in terms of cultural exchange. Back then, it was not possible, but now you can get a wife from Asia, Europe. Parents-in-laws are in trouble. Back then,
Dwight,
that look you have in your face.
Only if you're from America. Remember our pig butchering discussion?
Oh, yeah, that. Oh, it's still ongoing, though.
Yeah, it's still ongoing. And yeah. I think there's been victims in South Africa.
There's one. Okay, no, not of pig butchering, though. There's one, I think, movie actor that was, that was late last year. With her, it was not one of those big butchering cases. If with her, I think her phone was stolen, and then through her phone, the thieves were accessing her, banking information and stole, I think, about $500,000. Now, that one was revealed, though, that, you know, investigators began to suspect that there's a piece of software that was supposed, you know, be used by the police to crack into cell phones of suspected criminals. Mm. And that piece of software, ironically enough, found itself in the hands of criminals. Now they were using it to, you know, to steal phones and then crack into those phones and basically, you know, exploit whatever they, whatever banking information they were able to find in there. As if robbing you was not enough. So where were we? Global coming together, right? Well, all.
Well, not coming. Uh-huh. It's now being fragmented.
No, before the fragmentation.
Yeah.
Yeah. The global village technology is connected, is connecting us in terms of communication and transport and transport also factor in the trading of goods and services in there. So the exchange of knowledge and everything, education, you see, a lot of universities now have exchange, you know, student exchange programs. Which is why I said earlier that until Donald Trump came in and say, well, I have a different thought. But, one thing that we see that is that, our interconnectedness was, to some degree a good thing. Was to some degree a good thing. But then we realized that, our economies are also just intertwined. That one, you know, when you drop, when you drop a rock somewhere in this pond of global economics, the ripple effect reaches in parts of the pond where the stone have not seen before.
Yeah.
Now, this is what we are basically going to talk about here, and this is with regards to the bond market. This is government bonds, right?
Well, it seems it is government bonds,
yeah.
And some of the particular details have been held with that specifically. And this was even a remark that our governor of our central bank, Johannes Gavagap, made last Friday.
Yeah,
and that's at an event where they were technically celebrating the fifth anniversary of the Namibia Deposit Guarantee Authority. Now, here's the funny thing. Just a detail outside of our discussion. So, the NDGA, the NDGA exists, it's now currently 5 years old.
Yeah.
It was begun, or it started in 2020. But here's the thing, Helmut. The NDGA comes after the fact of what happened to the SME bank.
Yeah.
So, this was primarily the...
Okay, that's interesting.
Remember when the SME bank collapsed?
Yeah.
2018.
Uh-huh.
Remember? And it's also in the guide to the Namibian economy.
Yeah.
So the collapse is outside of the particular existence, obviously, of this NDGA. And... Because at the heart of the NDGA, if anyone goes and reads the Act, which is also something that was reiterated 5 times from the deputy governors to the people in charge of the NDGA, that's the other Bank of Namibia particular officials, and the governor, all of them have highlighted, and even the association that authority, the global association that the NDGA is also party to,
mm-hmm.
and the South African one, and the Ghanaian one that was also here to give like their, you know, well wishings. You know, it's almost like the godparents, you know, coming and wishing everyone, hey guys, how you doing? Happy birthday. So everyone reiterated the same message. It's to ensure, it's to be that, to be
so
that.
Investor confidence or something.
Not investor, depositor. So
yeah, depositor, yeah.
So depositor here is every person.
Which is a good thing given the times.
Yeah, but if you listen to the next part of the sentence I'm going to finish, they only guarantee up until 25,000 Namibian dollars per depositor. Now, at the heart of this particular discussion, which is the scenario that I've got to highlight here. So what we will hear from the governor's we've got the audio where the governor also highlighted this particular aspect of there's this global bond sell-off discussion. And it's not a notion yet about the bonds, but rather about the uncertainty that has been created since 2 April this month. And we are just 2 weeks in, Helmut. Yeah. We're literally just two weeks in. One of our literature resources that I shared with you, they ended their particular analysis on the 9th of April, from 25 March to 9 April. It's the Michigan University, Michigan State University, consumer
index,
confidence index, something of that sort. And there's a whole lot of things that feed, that we don't see easily in Namibia or in South Africa, but that the Americans are already seeing happening in their side, specifically with regards to how does it pinch the everyday person on the ground. Now, these are things that also trickle through to us. Another particular investment house has done the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They've primarily gone and looked at Trump's particular analysis, which feeds into our discussion of last week, Monday. Remember the one about the tariff discussion?
Yeah.
Which we, our conclusionary remark was, this is overall protectionism that he's trying to instigate.
Interesting enough, that's Jeffrey Sachs also. So.
Yeah, he or Sachs also highlights that.
Yeah.
As well as also Richard Wolff, as well as also Yanis Varoufakis. But they all three of them go in this long-winded discussion because Wolff would tell you this is an empire in decline.
Yeah.
Sachs would come and tell you this is a particular global order that was only seen through the perspective of one country, and that the rest of the world should work for this one country.
Yeah, so, you all have, don't come up with your way of doing things. My way is the right way.
Yeah, you have to support my petrodollar. You have to support the institutions around my country because, we give the largest money to this institution, which is the IMF and the World Bank, which has been the things that Trump has always said since his first term. You guys have to work for us. You guys have to do your part. Which is true in extent, I mean, but not on the NATO thing. I don't agree on the NATO side of things. Primarily based upon the evidence that was presented to your listeners, because the discussion out there has been, look for other ways to try and diversify your economies and not try and focus development and research through your Ministry of Defense or through your armies or through your militaries. Apologies, guys. So the indicator from this has been a discussion of what has been some of the other particular fallouts or events that we don't see as easily. Now, Helmut, also in preparation for this discussion that we've had today, because our discussion has to morph from our protectionist discussion we had last week into a different zone, which is literally set. And I actually want us to play that audio a little bit earlier.
First. Okay.
Yeah. Which is actually said by the governor, because we've got to work from the governor's statement. We've got to work into the rest of our discussion. And from that, dear listeners, we obviously have the nice opportunity of listening to this. And it's very profound.
That's the voice of the Bank of Namibia governor. That's Johannes Gavasap. Am I pronouncing that?
Khab.
Gavakhab, yeah. Ooh, thousand apologies for
that. Executive of CRAN, Mrs. Ikembua, let me stand on the protocol established. Good morning. As we gather for the Namibia Deposit Guarantee Authority's fifth year anniversary and the launch of the institution's 2024 annual report, I'm reminded of the words by Tony Robbins when he said, "The only impossible journey is the one you never begin." 5 years ago, in pursuit of modernizing our financial system and aligning it with the demands of the new age, Namibia joined a growing community of nations that have established financial safety nets to protect consumers and safeguard financial stability. Today, we take a moment to celebrate this milestone and the road we have traveled. This anniversary celebration provides an opportunity not just to reflect on the past 5 years, but also to look into the future. The celebration, fostering financial stability and effective deposit insurance scheme, is indeed timely and befitting. Along with supervision and resolution, deposit insurance is one of the key elements that form part of the financial safety net. In my remarks this morning, I want to highlight and locate deposit insurance schemes as a critical component of our overall financial stability mandate within the crisis management framework of the financial sector. But before I do that, I'll fail in my duty if I do not comment on the recent global economic and financial developments and the impact thereof on financial stability. The reason for doing that is just to emphasize the importance to have a fund like the NDGA in Namibia. The world is in a state of flux where the old certainties no longer hold and the outlines of the new remain obscured by the fog of transition. Familiar contours of the global order are dissolving before our eyes. In their place, a more fragmented geoeconomic landscape is emerging, marked by tension, competition, and protectionism. The shifting sands of power and purpose leave policymakers and markets, particularly financial markets alike, navigating with blurred compasses, their bearings scrambled by unpredictability. The past week, the tremors of uncertainty shook the very foundations of financial markets. A brutal sell-off in global bond markets signaled a deepening unease, while equity markets convulsed in volatility rarely seen before, proof that sentiment is fragile and confidence easily fractured. As fractures appear between nations, they echo within financial markets, magnifying systemic risk. It is in this turbulence that our collective strength must be summoned. The arc of history may be bending, but by building strong institutions and funds like the NDGA in investing in protective measures, we can shape our destiny despite the turmoil that we have seen the past week. So let me get back. In circumstances like these, we need strong institutions. We need strong leadership. We need to be able to anticipate what's happening and don't wait to be caught off guard. That's why we have got something like the NDGA to provide for the uncertainties. If something comes in financial markets and we've got instability, our depositors are at least protected. The critical role of deposit insurance was one of many lessons from the global financial crisis. There is a great diversity of deposit insurance arrangements, with well over 130 deposit insurance institutions all over the world. Context matter. The design and model of these schemes must be aligned to the unique needs of the jurisdiction. It must be fit for purpose. In Namibia, we have opted to start off this entity with a mandate based on what is called a paybox model, which provides the deposit insurer with a more limited set of powers that facilitate the payment of claims to depositors. There was a time when incidents of bank failures would happen once in a generation, no more. There was a time when regulators would be confronted by waves of distressed financial institutions that were few and far between. By all measures, that time has surely passed, as these incidents seem to be more frequent and more severe, often exacerbated by rapid winds of change in technological evolution that has taken place since the beginning of this century. Globalization and integration in global financial markets has shrinked the world further, making regulation in financial markets and institutions rather challenging. There was a time when regulated entities were confined to a certain geographical location and limited to the provision of a set of defined services and products. Today, The emergence of fintechs has enabled new and sophisticated players offering non-conventional products across both the banking and non-bank financial sectors. This convergence, on the back of advancement in technology, has resulted in more options and opportunities available to end users of financial services, but also poses regulatory challenges amidst the build-up of risk and vulnerabilities. In response to this reality, regulators are required to relook at their crisis management frameworks and ensure alignment to best practices and responsiveness to this new risk. This crisis management framework of which I speak is nothing else but a playbook that clearly demarcates the roles of relevant institutions in managing a crisis and outlining the tools and techniques available to mitigate the impact of emerging risk. The framework clearly articulates the action to be taken before, during, and after a crisis. It pulls through the supervisory action and early detection of risk and vulnerabilities all the way to resolution of distressed entities. It is worth noting that the deposit insurance scheme comes in at the tail end of this framework when depositors need to be compensated of their funds in an event of bank failure. One thing that financial system regulators have come to agree on is the difficulty associated with the prediction of crises. If it was easy, we would have predicted and probably avoided preceding crises. Since the last global financial crisis, authorities have, however, made significant investments in the enhancement of the supervisory tools and triggers to help determine when things are going terribly wrong, such that the crisis is imminent. The Bank of Namibia Act No. 1 of 2020 gives the central bank a new macroprudential oversight mandate. This means the central bank now has the responsibility of monitoring and assessing risks across the entire financial system and take corrective measures through the macroprudential oversight committee. To do this effectively, the Bank of Namibia will continue to enhance its surveillance and early detection of risk and vulnerabilities in whatever shape or form they appear. In addition, the Bank of Namibia is making significant investment geared towards enhancing our supervisory capability as part of our smart regulation agenda. To this end, we took a big step in 2024 with the in-house development of artificial intelligence-driven supervisory tools. These include a machine learning predictive model for early detection of credit non-performing loans and a natural language processing model designed to extract insights from government reports and other key documents. These innovations reshaped how we identify risk, how we extract actionable intelligence, and make data-driven decisions. Despite all the effort from a regulatory perspective, through market forces and years poor management of financial institutions, a particular banking institution may need to exit the market unintentionally. An orderly resolution or liquidation of failed financial institution is critical in avoiding contagion and safeguarding financial stability. Before the concept of deposit insurance was introduced, distressed financial institutions would go down with depositors' funds. The global consensus is embedded in the Internal Association of Deposit Insurers' core principles is that depositors should never be left worse off in the event of a bank failure. This assurance alone helps to build the vital trust and confidence of depositors in the financial system, ultimately promoting financial stability. As the NDGA marks this milestone, it is essential to reflect on the gains and achievements of the last 5 years while using this as an opportunity for renewal and recommitment to safeguarding
no matter where you are, If you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
And that brings us to the end of that audio of the central bank governor, that's Johannes Kavahab, and who basically walked us through about some of the assurances that had to be made. And if you're listening towards the end, and we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll proceed with this discussion on the other hand. And if you listened towards the end, the whole the whole idea behind providing a service is assuring the people that you are providing the service that they are safe, their services or their products are safe, in this case the investment that they are doing with you. Now that led that basically is the whole idea behind the Namibia Deposit Guarantee Authority, aka NDGA. But before we continue, quick break.
Are you still buying data hoping it will last? Then switch to Paratus. Buying gigabytes so old school. With our mobile LTE prepaid packages, you take charge as we invest in time on our network, enjoying the freedom of uncapped data. When you buy a 1-day, 7-day, 14 or 30-day package, you get uncapped data usage for the duration of the package, no matter how much data you use. Explore our range of Paratus mobile LTE prepaid packages and enjoy the speeds of up to 10 megabytes per second. And most importantly, remove the uncertainty about how long your data will last. Contact us today at 083-300-1000 or visit our website at www.paratus.africa/Namibia. Terms and conditions apply. Always prepare,
Paratus. Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsine Hangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Diere, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-238-0683. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
It's just a minute past the hour of 5, and if you just tuned in, we are busy right now with you. Okay, we are 31 minutes into your drive time, or 32 minutes into your drive time show. That's a Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, and we're looking into a bond market. Now, I was only introduced to the whole idea, to the whole bond thing, at least, in the way that I understand it now. Let me just say earlier this year.
Yeah.
It's, actually late last year, somewhere around September, October. So I was having this conversation and, with a friend of mine, and, we basically went through the entire, Bank of Namibia website, and there's a lot of material you can find, you can find there. Now, one thing, one question I kept asking was, why is that, everyone that's, is left with, millions of dollars of insurance, they don't think about this? And of course there are a lot of reasons. One of them that we entertained and basically discussed around, mostly because this is just a friendly discussion, is that because of the lack of knowledge, not a lot of people that knows that you can actually buy bonds. It's one of the safest ways that you can compared to some other forms of investments.
Plus, also, it's a good thing you highlighted insurance here, Helmut. Yeah. Not that I'm obviously promoting anyone's particular scenarios, but last year, when we had the particular paid-for segment from Alan Gray, obviously the
the weekly engagement there also in one stage veered into the aspect of government bonds versus paying for an insurance or putting money into those particular plans, what do they call those things? It's almost like a small savings kitty, but it's also at some of these insurance companies.
Trust?
It could be the trust scenario, but yeah. But so focusing on the bond scenario. With the bond discussion, just so that listeners can understand this, bonds are literally the instruments that governments use to make a loan specifically in the local market, the local financial market, yeah, and internationally. So they can float the specific instrument wherever they wish, whichever they feel like is the best to source money from. This is also primarily sometimes how, in many cases, like in Namibia specifically, we had to go as the country, as our Ministry of Finance has had to go to the financial markets. Mm-hmm. This is on record. You can go look this up for most of the speeches that Minister Shimi had done. Specifically where if there is a shortfall, a financing shortfall, meaning money, cash shortfall, they would have to go and tap into the local financial markets again, or the markets ultimately that have reaped the best rewards for the Namibian, if I can say it, the treasury and so forth, because Ministry of Finance is most treasury, not the central bank guys, but still, those were the mechanisms. Yeah. And you get it seems like from what my very basic research has been, it seems like every X amount of time you get a payout, Helmut, as opposed to in some cases buying a share in a company here, buying a share in something there, which is almost the opposite. The other particular product, which comes from the private sector.
Yeah.
You are literally at the mercy of potentially how well
that business is doing.
The foot soldiers on the ground are performing. In most cases also, from what I've read, is that when
a soldier was uncalled for.
Because you are Muslim. We are Muslim foot soldiers, Hamoud, you and I. We technically are that. But,
yeah, but
I'm not talking about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle illustration of foot soldiers.
In that case then.
Yeah. So another mechanism also from private companies has been sometimes also known as the, what was the other thing's name that I wanted to highlight? You've got shares. And then there's something else, man, that they also use. The mechanism in terms of accessing a stock market where you float your shares on as a company, mm-hmm, a private company, has been, for example, like what has happened also in terms of some companies who want to expand more. So they seek public investors and then they go and offer that initial public offering. Yes. And then that initial public offering is then they look at the interest level that is generated. It increases. That's why they were talking about the stock markets last week, in terms of the damage supposedly that Donald Trump did. And then Donald Trump went and told on his own particular social media platform, Truth Social, now's the best time to buy. Literally 4 hours later,
then
a whole bunch of politicians, US politicians from Donald Trump's party and other,
goes on a shopping spree.
Not a shopping spree. They all recorded personal
wealth.
Through the roof. Yeah. Buying low, buying shares and stocks of
investigation and allegations of insider
trading that's currently floating about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you start off from that particular mechanism as well. Because here's the thing. Our particular take that our central bank governor gave, Helmut, was from a Namibian perspective, how can Namibia sort of like crisis proof itself from whatever Donald Trump is busy creating? Now, the crisis proofing is problematic because internally in the United States itself, there's also problems emanating from there. Now, remember you and I, our conclusion last week was saying Donald Trump is trying to instigate a protectionist.
Yeah, it's full on protectionism.
Protectionism through these tariff regimes.
Yeah.
The downside is I read another particular sort of like, opinion piece from a PhD economics, student, but it was in one of the other, media platforms here in Namibia who highlighted obviously the supply and demand discussion of things because of Namibia's particular exposure just to the international markets through us just exporting raw materials. It is a resounding yes. You are the person that wrote that, obviously they are right. But if we look in the context specifically of where a lot of the particular things had taken place, the negative performance of diamonds, like what also the same central bank administrators at the same event last Friday had highlighted as well. Confusing them with someone else that I read. The downside has literally been a discussion of when you look. No, it is them. Sorry, it is from Madam Florette Nakusera, from who is the she was the representative of the NDGA that presented sort of like the performance, you know, the economic performance of Namibia to set the scene. Obviously, is what they always do, and then you get an indicator from there. The negative performance, Helmut, in Namibia's 2024 economic performance was down from the 2023 level. The reason for that had been that agriculture suffered, obviously, a dry spell, remember, with last year what we discussed a lot about.
Drought.
The droughts, the malnutrition, the problematic scenarios also with regards to, you know, but just trying to see where or not, how we're going to feed our country and achieve the food security, goal. And then the negative thing had obviously been the negative performance of diamonds. Now, why they single out diamond is obviously because of the
threats from lab-grown diamonds.
Yeah, the lab-grown diamonds, which it seems, and if you did not know, dear listeners, the main diamond trading companies in the world literally brought on. And it seems now everyone wants to do lab-grown diamonds, which is, I don't understand.
Basically showed themselves.
How do you do that? But anyway, you know, I've never heard of intentional, unintentional suicide, but dude,
that's every tech guy with AI today.
Exactly. So, the negative aspect obviously stems from the negative absorption rate. So that has been observed in 2024 for diamond and the diamond supply into the global economy. The downside from that had been, you can literally see, because the extractive sector, yeah, it recorded a negative 1.8% in growth. And literally it looked bad, Helmut. It really looked bad. Because if you got to ask yourself the question of why are we exposing ourselves as an economy to, you don't know what kind of a politician the United States would vote in. Because here's the thing, the US voter does not care about us Namibian voters, because us Namibian voters are voting in for our Namibian politicians.
For our own interests.
For our interests. And we do know that our position in terms of impacting global trade, to Namibia's benefit, it's like a fly trying to combat a tornado. Yeah. Literally.
Yeah.
And literally, if you do, and if you understand us, the fly, literally, we would just be hit with one grain of sand. We're knocked out of this fight. The downside of what Donald Trump is doing is that there's no, regard for the permeations that will be impacted in our economy, for example. No permeations. Remember in our tariff discussion of last week, the protectionist theories, I singled out at the end of that talk that Trump's commerce secretary, it's a guy with a very weird name, and he does not even seem to understand the basics of standards, trade standards, standards on products, because if you want to sell a product in my market, you have to adhere to my standards.
Yeah.
It's a bit, Namibia, it goes through it every day, Hamut. When we sell our money, our meat to anyone internationally, they tell us what their standards are, because we go and inquire.
Yeah.
And we meet those standards.
We meet those standards. We don't tell them to
lower just accept,
or just, you know what, we're a small country developing, blah, blah, blah.
But we believe we can get the nice, the lovely foreign currency from your economy by what we sell to you. But, and for us to achieve that common goal is literally, we have to meet your standards. The Americans want Europe to drop VAT. Now VAT, Helmut, like you and I qualified last week, is a universally applicable applied mechanism, which is the easiest mechanism to of revenue for a government.
Yeah.
Even in Namibia. So VAT is on a local company and on an importing company to Namibia.
Yeah.
Now, that Commerce Secretary could not even define value added tax. They did not even know anything about value added tax that the Europeans are charging on products. Now he thinks that the value added, he thinks, because he's still active, he's still in this role, he thinks that the Europeans are just putting on VAT on American goods. It is not the case. They are also putting on VAT on European produced goods.
Yeah.
It's the same thing that we in Namibia do, that the South Africans do. VAT is applied everywhere.
Now, this is where I have, this is where I fail to understand a lot of the ways that Western countries do things now. Because, Jeffrey Sachs is a professor of economics.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a pretty smart guy in his field he's basically a specialist.
Yeah.
But let's take a quick break and we'll continue on the other side.
Are you ready for a fresh new flavor? Then enjoy the latest addition to the Vintook beer family. Vintook lemon-flavored non-alcoholic beer. It's got the same taste that you love, but now with added lemon flavor to guarantee 100% refreshment in every sip. Now that's 100% real. Head to your nearest store and enjoy the new Vintook lemon-flavored non-alcoholic beer for yourself today. Vintook, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Yeah, 15 minutes past the hour of 5. Now, where was I? Where I don't understand why the West do things the way that it does. Again, I remember when I gave a similar example about diplomacy.
Yeah.
I like to point out that Western countries, it's not like they don't have experts at diplomacy. Individuals that are academics and are very good at negotiating. And you can just name, you can wake me up and I will give you a list of about 5 Western guys who will make excellent diplomatic individuals to negotiate for the American individual, for the American people.
Mm.
But again, you see that everyone with the right knowledge on a subject is sidelined. Now, when you look at, Jeffrey Sachs, for example, his criticism on the fourth Antalya diplomacy forum, which is underway in Turkey right now. One thing he points out was that the whole trade deficit that led to the quote unquote reciprocal tariffs.
Yeah.
Is somewhat of something that doesn't make a lot of economic sense. And Jeffrey Sachs goes on to use an example of someone that has multiple credit cards. You have multiple credit cards and then you go, on a shopping spree.
Yeah.
Now, when you find out that you are drowning in debt, you start blaming those shops for selling you the products. Like, how does that work?
Or that
you went shopping. They didn't drag you in.
Or you start blaming the same shops for having adverts that are telling you we've got these goods here. Because here's the thing, Hamut, that'll currently and right now once again happen. It's always some of these discussions that my brother and I have. So you start seeing like weird specials popping up in like weird parts of the month, for example. And these specials are telling you that, and this is got nothing to do with Black Friday or the Black November, specials that obviously take place before Black Friday, cause it takes place most now these days, the whole week where that Friday finds itself, 25 November. It's got nothing to do with that particular discussion, because if people are automatically jumping there in your sort of like in your mind's eye to November, you are misplacing that particular thought process, guys. Observe every week. Now you start seeing retailers will start fluctuating. 1 week, the price of the product is on the actual price that the retailer wants you to pay. Now, there's one retailer, Helmut, in, was it in last year, that kept doing this. I know which retailer, I won't mention that name, but I observed on a specific product that I used to, that I buy every year. Every week, every month I buy this product. And it's on butter, but it's their in-house brand. Another company that tries to sell through them. So it's on their in-house. So the butter would come in, because the butter is not made in Namibia. I don't know why Namibia cannot make butter, because if you can make yogurt, you can make butter. If you can make cream, you can make butter. If you can make, what's the other one's name? If you can make buttermilk, which is omayere, if you can make buttermilk, you're just one step away from making butter. So, that's my digression. So, and there's a lot of money in butter. However, so, the product would land, let's say the previous Friday. Let's say, when was now in this Monday? Let's say last Friday, the product lands on the shelf. It says there, it's at, let's say, $89 for 500 gram of salted butter and unsalted butter. Then literally by Wednesday, the price has been reduced by $20. So it gets bought out. By Friday again, they restock. It's the same thing. The same rhythm.
Okay,
sits at 89.
Yeah.
And by Wednesday,
it's at 60 something.
It's at 79 again. Or it's at 69 again. $20
okay.
off.
Okay, now, then the following week, a new stock comes in.
Remember, by the end of that Friday,
yeah.
by the end of that week, of that Wednesday, they restock again. And then on Monday, they put up the price that they want to sell it at. And then they potentially, because I don't know, they probably see people then don't touch it. And then by Wednesday, they have to bring the price down again. Now, Helmut, there's an interesting factor that even comes in from the discussion regarding Namibia and Lesotho, sort of like automobile.
The one that we had.
Yeah.
Interest into thinking about investing into the, automobile industry.
And participating in it.
Yeah.
A weird thing came out back in 2016. And I think a lot of people that are specifically Toyota lovers and Toyota Bucky drivers and who are consumers of that specific car in that product range. If you guys remember, there was the zero deposit campaigns on cars in 2015, 2016, 2017. And then somewhere, it's either Ministry of Finance or the Bank of Namibia, they stepped in and they said, no, don't do the zero deposit thing because you as a consumer, you were hit with a balloon payment at the end of your payment term.
So it's not really, okay, it is zero deposit, but with a catch.
But you were told about the catch beforehand. Here's the thing that people don't know about the consumer market, which is formalized. You have to tell me.
You know what? I should have really learned these things because I labeled insects, but now I'm no offense to those cockroaches. But the thing is,
and remember, we're talking about products now
that
will be exposed to what the governor said of the headwinds that potentially can come
global economy
from
any direction, east, west, north.
No, from Trump's chaos. Helmut, there is just no way. Okay, the reason why I mentioned the Buckies.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, Toyota has a factory in South Africa.
Yeah.
Which is pretty close. But the financial market of South Africa is exposed to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And since it's exposed to the United States, because companies like Old Mutual South Africa, Investec South Africa, the three big banks, Nedbank, Standard Bank, and FNB, they have financial assets in the American financial market. I cannot deny it. We cannot ignore it. And the downside is, Helmut, literally.
It's a shockwave type of effect.
Exactly. Now, the 2008-2009 financial crash, which technically began in 2007.
Yeah.
That's why I keep referencing back to 2007. which was known as the Great Recession, led to European countries imposing austerity. Now, I said sometime last year, I said that Namibia technically is also going through austerity, but this is because of the impacts before COVID and then our rebuilding from COVID. So everything up from, that's now in President Hage Geingob's first term up to 2019. And then from 2021, we had to rebuild in this direction. So now when you're looking at those two periods, Helmut, literally Namibia had to impose austerity on itself, meaning we had at one stage, we had to tell the rest of the country that no capital projects would be engaged in. And specifically, that's in order to just save money. The government saving its own money, saving money where possible. So they just waited for certain projects to finish, and then they continued. Then they had like a pause for one financial year, and then fall into the next one. And that was specifically 2022 or 2023 that it was said. And that's, mind you, the midterm expenditure framework obviously came out in 2023 for the next three financial years. Now, when you work from that particular angle of, okay, so what happened internationally? Internationally, Namibia got exposed to a devastating five-year drought. And then we got reclassified because of our middle income. Middle income status.
Development. Yeah. More of economic elevation, yeah.
So that meant, because we've got these mining companies and some of the extractive sectors that are selling, everyone is internationally is buying our stuff.
Mm.
But, and that's why you have to realize as a Namibian, the average Namibian, the GDP indicator of what is Namibia's GDP value is a, what is that term that I wanted to say?
I have an easy one.
It's a distracting
misinformation.
Term. Yeah, it is, but it is a misaligned conception, because to think that Namibia has 4,500 GDP per capita, $4,500.
Oh.
Now go and ask yourself, Helmut, where do you have 800,000 Namibian dollars on you? No? 80,000, yeah, 4,500. 80,000 Namibian dollars. Where do you have that?
Forget 80. Just minus the 80 and ask where I have the 8.
Because remember, that 4,500, you've got to multiply by 20. So where is that 80,000 Namibian dollars that you're earning? Where's that potential earnings?
Neither.
It's nowhere. Because GDP is based upon what you are exporting. Now, it looks bad. If you're looking at a GDP indicator, and this is ultimately why I've roped in what I read a little bit earlier today also for in preparation for today, where this particular PhD student highlights, yeah, Namibia's particular exports into certain realms of the international economy are going to be impacted for this year, Hamoud. And here's where things are going to get even weirder. Now, for those of you that might have seen, yes, it seems like one of our largest development partners, or our two largest development partners, China and the EU, they are really going to ramp up their particular involvement specifically in a country like Namibia. They are going to do this, dear listeners. Reason being, everyone is literally now saying, let's step away from the Americans.
So find a different partner to do business with.
But it also means, Helmut, we have private sector companies that are used to selling to the US market.
But
now they have to find a stable, another alternative stable client to redirect that supply to. Let's, for example, say things, because the imports, the tariffs are literally most now on if you send the copper or the tin from here to the US market.
Yeah.
The boat lands there. Let's say in Florida. Or let's say it lands there in New York Bay.
Yeah.
New York City Bay. The tariff is being put on there. The tariff is not being put on here. The tariff is being put on there.
That means that the people that do the same business that you are, that sell the same product, take copper that are of American origin, they don't have to worry about the tariff. So
yeah.
Your difference in pricing, because you have to factor the price, the tariffs in, they don't. Mm. Their product is most likely to be cheaper.
Whose product? The American?
Yeah.
No.
Or is it going to jack up the prices so that they can match with yours? And then you don't have a lot of consumers.
The explanation was given about iPhone again.
Oh dear.
Now.
Okay, but during the whole pause of the 90-day pause of the tariffs, those guys say that the electronics are not part of it?
No, but that was not the confusion, because that's the second scenario of this.
Yeah.
That's why I said now a Namibian company, or a, let's say a company, a private sector company that's obviously in the mining sector.
Yeah, trading in
that is now selling material. Now selling to the United States market. Remember, most of that is sometimes determined by the London Metals Exchange, which I found out through my father who worked in the mining sector as well. Because he told me that's the London Metals Exchange. There's two of them. There's the London Metals Exchange, and I think there's the Shanghai Composite Metals Exchange. These two markets determine global metal prices. So if you're mining iron ore, if you're mining gold, if you're mining copper, if you're mining zinc, lead, tin, all those metals, prices are
determined by them.
They are set at those two exchanges. Now, obviously, the boat is going to the US. The boat is not stopping in London. But before we continue, we actually got a ad break creeping up on us.
And the world of economics.
Do you urgently need cash and happen to own a car? Creditors delaying and contractors need to be paid? When life throws you a rainy day, AutoCash got your back. Park your car and get up to 45% of its value within 45 minutes. No payslip, no bank statement, just the car. Moolah when you need it.
Easy money.
Call us today on 061-400-676. That is 061-400-676. Auto Cash, it's that simple.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
And coming back to listeners from the quick break right there, and obviously that leaves us with the last 28 or 29 minutes towards the top of the hour at 6 p.m. So the explanation just before the break primarily was a discussion of, in terms of the global commodity prices, you will start seeing things, you know, being impacted specifically with the uncertainty that is created from the United States. This ultimately also feeds in primarily into some of the particular analyses that have come through. One of them primarily has come through from the University of Michigan itself. And just to give you sort of like a bare bones indicator about this particular analysis has been, what is the translation that you can look into? Now, this was ultimately done, as mentioned, by the University of Michigan. They call it the surveys of consumers. And it's based upon the preliminary April 2025 results that they had to look at. So what the survey looked at was they looked at consumer sentiment that fell for the fourth straight month. It plunged 11% from the March timeframe. And primarily what this spoke of was specifically the difference in terms of, you know, what the sentiment looked like in March 2025 versus April 2025. Still being early days primarily, but the particular change that actually took place and what fueled this particular change. Now, the decline was, according to the Michigan State University, or the Michigan University, or University of Michigan in the U.S., was that, like the previous month, March, pervasive and unanimous across age, income, education, geographic region, and political affiliation, is that the sentiment has now lost more than 30% since December 2024, amid the growing worries about the trade war developments that have oscillated over the course of this 4 month period alone. No, 5 month period alone now. Now, the worst thing is also, Helmut, is that literally, and this is another thing that international commentators like these, high profile economists that you and I keep referencing have mentioned continuously. They kept saying, but the American voters heard Donald Trump saying he's gonna push for tariffs. He's gonna bring in tariffs. He's gonna bring in tariffs. And all of them were going, yay, this is our guy. He sounds good on the tariff game. But what does the tariff do? It's an extra tax on you, the American.
That's a good question, right? This whole discussion has been going on for a while now because, yeah. There are even a lot of, social media influencers or vloggers that were on the ground, I think, about 2 or 3 months ago asking, you know, just a regular citizen, a citizen in the country.
Yeah.
What do tariffs mean?
Yeah.
And a lot of them, like yours truly here, had no clue how these things work.
Yeah.
Because, look, the whole idea is very easy to sell. All we're going to do is put tariffs on all the products that we are, that we are importing so that we can deter those people from selling us the products. And then the manufacturers that are manufacturing those products outside of the U.S. to come and sell here will have no choice but to bring the manufacturing base at home so they can create employment here. I assure you, if any political party here used that strategy in a manifesto, they would have one heck of a voter, one heck of a voter's population. Until you begin to realize that, okay, you can pull that off, but it's going to take a very long period of pain because everything that you are importing then becomes expensive.
Not just the importation, Almut. I'll give you, and this is where the fears of another particular inflation, a rampant inflation, could hit the world economy. So back in, it's so interesting that I actually watched this yesterday, this documentary. It's known on the Infographics something channel on YouTube. The guy explained that there was actually another financial crash that took place before the Great Depression in the 1930s. Now remember the Great Depression is known as the world's longest global financial problem. It stretched from 1930 or 1929 to 1940. And it was literally the precursor the build up for the Second World War. Now, the other developments technically for the First World War, obviously, pertaining towards the unresolved issues that came from the Napoleonic Wars because of what Napoleon did during his sort of like 10-year or 20-year particular reign as emperor of France. Now, the world obviously tried to move away from the particular systems that took affairs that took place up to 1920. But in the United States, the problem was exacerbated by a couple of things. Firstly, Europe was once again trying to rebuild. Obviously. And at that stage, to help the European economies rebuild after the First World War, European farmers needed what do they call that term, that I've heard with the green hydrogen discussion? They needed an offtake market. So an offtake market is you need a market that will absorb what you're producing so that they can get foreign currency in order to help with their rebuilding and restructuring. Which is literally what we are what we are going to enjoy as Namibia when the green hydrogen and the other particular green hydrogen and green manufacturing processes start coming online. For example, like this recently inaugurated with President Nandi Ndaitwa being there at the coast, because the higher end plant is actually outside of that town. Highlighting the key developments going on. Now, the offtake markets have been explained in regarding the green energy or the green hydrogen manufacturing process and all that as being Japan, South Korea, the EU, and there's one other country that I missed. I think it's India. No, it's not India. But anyway, now in this small forgotten financial crash that took place before the Great Depression, it was brought on because of a tariff game. So two senators back then during the 1920s, realized that European farmers and European farm products were literally dominating American shelves and the American agricultural retail scene. So they brought in a protectionist bill to help American farmers and their produce for them to enjoy
their own market,
their own particular market. But remember, it was a trade negotiation between the American cabinet representatives and the European cabinet and the European representatives in order to help Europe rebuild itself from this particular devastating war. And yes, obviously the American farmer would say, but you know, it's got nothing to do with us. However, the American farmer was enjoying the supply. Sorry for that. They were enjoying the supply they had during the First World War, the supply that they provided
into that war. Yeah.
They were enjoying it because they were selling to the UK, they were selling to the American army, they were selling to the Canadians, they were selling to
because
the
of
French.
The war, there were no any, you know, they didn't, well, as you'd expect, there's no any agricultural activities or farming activities going
taking
on,
place
so,
in those countries.
Yeah.
So they need, those guys need to buy food
so
from
you
somewhere.
You have a giant market. That's,
exactly. And and you can charge any price. Now, when that war ended, obviously, the American government with the League of Nations that was newly established then, they needed to find a rebuild strategy for the European farmers there. And this rebuild strategy literally rebounded on the American government because two American senators in their Senate came and said, you know what, we don't like what you're doing to our farmers. But their farmers were literally profiteering from a war.
Literally.
They were literally profiteering from a war. And in order to protect the same farmers that had these wonderful, you know,
market,
everything was going crazy for them in positive terms.
Because they were halfway across the planet.
Exactly. Now, they brought in a protectionist piece of legislation. Now, it's known I just want to get that legislation's name, but it has two people name. It has two people's names in it. The downside is, Helmut, that this actually led to the particular collapse on the European side of, you know, the offtake market, led to a collapse on their side. Now, when it led to a collapse on that European side, the European governments, the European consumers there could not repay the loans that they were owing the American banks because it was once again the American banks, like the Marshall Plan, which came through.
Financing everything.
They were financing the rebuilding of Europe.
Yeah.
And when that happened, those guys started defaulting. Then these guys started defaulting in the US. Just because of a stupid
protectionist
piece of protectionist legislation. And it was actually only meant for the agricultural sector, but it was taken out of proportion. It was applied to all European goods. And that is how a mini particular global financial crash led and built up literally to the 10-year problem of the Great Depression that led to the Second World War. Hence the reason why many of the economists are saying it's a stupid strategy what Donald Trump is getting in. Because even here locally, there's an investment house that also said much of the basis that Donald Trump bases his analogy or his logic on for the tariffs is purely fabricated. The guy that developed the equation that Donald Trump explained it on.
Does he even understand it?
Partially. I've even forgotten that equation because after I watched CNN interview the guy, this particular economist.
Developed the equation.
Yeah, the guy who developed the equation.
Okay, but here's the thing. You remember how during COVID-19 we were told to stand 1 meter away from each other?
Yeah.
And, Anthony Fauci comes out after the COVID-19 pandemic, goes like, well, not saying there was, it was backed by science. I'm just saying, just scratched my head and came up with it. But well, it helped, didn't it? Now, okay. Protectionism is basically, to some degree, fueled by paranoia.
Yeah.
And you can't tell me that, okay, some of the, you can't tell me that some of the things that take, for example, Trump and his advisors are doing, that they believe that it will yield the result that they are telling everyone that they will yield, because clearly they won't.
Mm.
First of all, like, look, the question I think they, these guys have all asked themselves that question, and they know the answer to is, how did these companies, how did the entire American manufacturing base find itself across the planet, most of which are in Asia? How?
Yeah.
Because, Vietnam did not fly to the U.S. and say, you know what, bring your markets to us. It was these markets that were looking for high return on investment to provide, you know, fed dividends to their shareholders. So they had to find a way to cut costs somehow. They knew that cutting cost to the degree, and also, you know, all the working hours and working conditions that are always dominating social media, that are coming out of Asia. If you take that to the U.S., it's going to be, lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit.
Yeah.
So, obviously, it's all emerging from exploitation. Unless these manufacturers are allowed to exploit the market in terms of cheap labor and also, in terms of cheap labor and basically the terribleness of the working conditions in the U.S., I don't see anyone moving their manufacturing base there.
Helmut, actually, a video recently came out about cheap labor.
Oh, the AI-generated one.
About
Tim Cook. The one I saw was of an AI-generated.
Oh, no, you're talking about the Americans.
Yeah.
How the Chinese are apparently roasting the Americans about that AI-generated, through that AI-generated video.
Yeah.
But no, it's another video about Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple.
Yeah.
It was highlighted in another particular discussion where he was speaking at a panel discussion, and he asked the question to the person that, because he was asked the question about, you know, is Apple in China because of labor,
cheap labor?
And he said, I don't know what year you are talking about. I also don't know what part of China you're talking about, because China has moved away from that, according to that video. About like, it was like more than 10 years back that they have moved away from being the on cheap labor alone, competing on cheap labor alone to foreign investors. But he noted specifically, according to him, specifically, that if you had to look at vocational skill level to work in the factories of Apple, that per every one American that you try to train, China already has like thousands of these people.
Now, here's the beauty of it. For a very long time, globalization, remember?
Yeah.
The West, especially the US, they just liked to draw the schematics and then build the parts and then send them for assembling
somewhere
else. So the people then, how many people were drawing the schematics and how many people were building these components?
Yeah.
They're not a lot. Because this is intellectual property that you're talking about. It's more of a closed loop of information. Now, how many people were assembling these parts? A lot in this assembly plant. So the assembling parts and basically these components, how they go together to produce an electronic device like you and I have, it's something that a lot of Asian countries like China have been doing for a very long time. So they have acquired that skill to the point where it has become, at this point, I think, muscle memory.
Mm.
So now after it's assembled, who is the market? They ship it back.
Yeah.
So.
And like we show, like we indicated also in our discussion last week about the automotive industry that Namibia and Lesotho are trying to get into, we obviously looked at the value chain. Existence. For example, a bumper can bounce between three countries just for various parts to be put onto the bumper.
Yeah, the type of a metal is coming from somewhere else.
Yeah.
The nuts and bolts are coming from somewhere else. The paint is coming from somewhere else.
But remember that, that bumper is first made here. Then it has to literally cross a border to another country. And then the nuts or bolts are put on there. And then it literally has to go to another country for the paint. And then from that paint, it comes back to the first country where it was made to be put onto the car.
Yeah.
And this is the particular chaotic scenario that's also about to become problematic, because in that consumer perception discussion from the University of Michigan, and I just want to cite from them specifically, they noted weird particular developments, obviously, in their concerns. And these are concerns that we sometimes see coming through, like in the consumer price index analysis of Namibia. Now, they noted here in by this University of Michigan, this is just the summary of it that I'm reading from. They noted that consumers report multiple warning signs that raise the risk of recession. So, and we're talking about this last survey was done between 25 March and 9 April, up to last week. 9 April was last Wednesday. They note expectations of business conditions, the personal finances of these consumers, the incomes of these consumers, the inflation, the labor markets that all continue to deteriorate between 25 March and 9 April. The share of consumers expecting unemployment to rise on the year ahead increased for the fifth consecutive month and is now more than double than the November 2024 reading and the highest since 2009. Now remember, this is based upon perception in this regard. Which now feeds into another particular perception discussion as well, as also in terms of what political leaders also see, for example, these American political leaders. Now remember I mentioned the tariffs that were brought in just before the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
I actually found them, just for context. So Woodrow Wilson tried to spur on. He was the American president at the end of this First World War.
Yeah.
Now he tried to spur on global economic activity. So they had to pass a Federal Reserve Act of 1913, and ultimately this was all about trying to, you know, have the American banking system bankroll the whole world through rebuilding. But we obviously know where the whole world was, because primarily that was just in Europe. The rest of us were still colonies, or if you were like South America, you were still playing, you know, samba on the beaches and you didn't care about development.
Yeah.
So, this is now the next excerpt I'm going to read you, Helmut. So, when the Republicans regained power after the war, they restored the usual high rates with the Fordney-McCumber tariff of 1922. That's the tariff that kicked off all the crap up until 1930. Because the Fordney-McCumber tariff, Helmut, was a law that raised American tariffs on many imported goods to protect factories and farms, and was primarily aimed at European farm produce coming into the American market. Now remember what I explained to you? The American executive, the cabinet, their ministers had explained to the Europeans, you guys need an offtake market for your agricultural sectors that need to rebuild because it was bombed to smithereens.
Yeah.
And this Fordney,
they did bomb each other.
And this Fordney-McCumber Tariff Act of 1922 literally was brought in against that particular sort of like nation-to-nation negotiations. Now, when the Great Depression hit, because of the Fordney-McCumber Act, or Fordney-McCumber Tariff, international trade shrank drastically. The crisis also baffled the GOP. They call it the Grand Old Party. It's the other name, the GOP. And it tried to raise tariffs again through the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act of 1930. So they brought in a tariff for a tariff. You see how lovely the Americans are. And this time it actually backfired, as Canada, Britain, Germany, France, and other industrial countries retaliated with their own tariffs and special bilateral trade deals.
So the same thing that we are seeing play out between the US and China right now.
It has happened before in history. It is happening again, dear listeners. The unfortunate thing I don't want to experience is a Great Depression.
Any depression.
I don't want to see my Namibian, my 10 Namibian dollars be 10 is equals to 10 at the door and literally be is equals to 1 cent by the
when
time
you get
I get
to the shop.
By the time I get to the till. That's just what happened with the Great Depression.
Yeah.
For example, like what happened in Germany.
People went to
go buy bread. If you stand in the line, because the line is so long.
Yeah.
You stand in the line, the price of the bread was 1 Deutschmark. The time you got there. 20 minutes later, it was literally 1 cent. It was literally 100 Deutschmark.
And when you came back at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, at the end of the day, it was literally at 500 Deutschmark at the end of the day. So the downside was also there was a lot of rampant currency depreciation or appreciation, whichever one you want to look at, because it's always compared to another currency.
Yeah.
Your currency is always compared to another currency. That's the only thing I don't want to experience, Helmut. I'm really sorry. And the insider training,
trading accusations
in the U.S. are now ramping up.
And that's let's just be fair at this point when it comes to insider trading. This is not something that's new with American politics.
But here's
there have been accusations of insider trading for, but this one is a very interesting one because
he also made money, Donald Trump.
That's not the point, Dwight. He put it on social media.
I know, but he also made, and he even introduced tech billionaires who lost money on the same stock markets to personal buddies of his in the Oval Office and telling, yeah, this guy made 900 million. He woke up with 900 million in his bank account. How do you go and tell the world we are going to face a global recession because you wanted to make some personal bucks?
First of all, if you are going to do something questionable, at least do it with someone who is not, you know, who doesn't have social media fever. But
well, also don't be the Mozambicans who try to hide $2 billion in national debt.
Yeah, that was that backfired.
And when that finance minister got removed, suddenly this debt shows up from the World Bank and the IMF.
$2.2 billion of it.
And everybody's asking, so where did this come from?
Well, actually, it's tied to that SOE.
You know that guy that you had here formerly? Yeah, that one with the specs. Not me, Dwight. Not me, guys.
Yeah, that
other guy. He was the guy that signed off on that thing.
Yeah, he's the one that went to borrow it. And actually, he borrowed it already to revamp our naval infrastructure. But, as we can see, the infrastructure is still in disarray. So clearly the money was channeled somewhere else.
I'm not
a prophet, but I'm going to go on a lame here and assume it was channeled in his pocket. And they found out, it was actually true.
It went into multiple pockets. The pocket of the former president's son.
That example ties into my globalization and the intertwineness that I use, that I started off at the beginning of the show.
Mm.
I'm pretty sure there are people that participated in this $2.2 billion national swindle. But what they did not forecast, it's either they didn't forecast it or they are just diabolical. Because they lost 60% of the money, 60% they lost 60% of their national economic value. Why? It's because investors decided to head for the first exit they could see.
Yeah.
Because like you pointed out, the question they were asking themselves is, this guy's borrowed $2.2 billion and it was mismanaged. Who's going to pay for it?
Mm.
So in other words, if I continue operating in this country, it's just a matter of time before the taxes, both income and corporate, goes through the roof in order to service that debt. Therefore, while I have not spent as much money as I am going to if I hang around, I'll just pack my bags and leave. So now this was just supposed to be simple math. At least you'd think that. But anyway, back to Jeffrey Sachs.
Mm.
I would like to point out something that he said at the whole what's this event? Let me just get 4th Antalya Diplomacy Forum, which is currently happening in the city of the same name in Turkey.
Mm.
Now, Jeffrey Sachs pointed out that the United States does not tax Americans for transfers emanating from its spending because congressmen who vote on the budget got into office with their campaign paid for by rich people who don't like taxes. Now, you see the contradiction?
Yep.
I'm going to fund your campaign for you to get in that office and save my interest
I'll probably be the worst politician. Do you know that I'll actually say, yeah, give me your money, give me your money. Support me.
Yeah.
And this is now all the rich people listening to me now. And then I'll say, when I get into office, yeah, we'll
save your interest.
We will tax you.
And then you get into office and tax them?
Yeah.
Can I remind you something that happened in the country called the United States back in 1963?
What happened?
Dallas.
What happened?
President.
Oh.
Yeah.
Chance,
you're going to end up in that. I'm saying chance are very high.
Well, at least I'll be. What do they call that thing? I'll be forever immortalized.
Forever immortalized
through 1963. Through 1963. I'll be forever.
Example. So what you see here is somewhat okay. In his entire speech, what Jeffrey Sachs is trying to point out is that the U.S. trade deficit with all its trading partners is not an entirely, it's not entirely the fault of the U.S. trading partner, and the U.S. is blameless. No.
Well, it's also an inaccurate projection that he provided, Helmut, because it's a scenario like in our case in Namibia.
Yeah.
We're sending raw materials. Help it make sense, Helmut. We are selling raw materials.
Yeah. Okay, no, it's a good thing. Okay, we have a few minutes. We just have a minute at this point.
We'll appropriate without compensation.
I know.
Yeah.
Okay, I asked myself that one question, I think that was last week. How do we keep sending out raw material and we are promising employment?
Are you ready for a fresh new flavor? Then enjoy the latest addition to the Vintook beer family. Vintook lemon-flavored non-alcoholic beer. It's got the same taste that you love, but now with added lemon flavor to guarantee 100% refreshment in every sip. Now that's 100% real. Head to your nearest store and enjoy the new Vintook lemon-flavored non-alcoholic beer for yourself today. Vintook, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Yeah, I think whether we like, I have had two shows at two different entities where I was told that, no, your material, it's very nice. I mean, it's funny, but it's too political. But you know what? I'm laughing about global, about this whole global economic meltdown. Is everyone is taking interest in politics. Everyone is taking interest in economics.
But here's the thing. A lot of them.
Yeah.
A lot of them, Helmut. I'll say it again. A lot of them don't look at it from how does it personally impact me?
Uh-huh.
It's a question of I want to be in the current conversation just also to sound clever.
No.
Walk in there. Please read beforehand, guys. Don't walk in there. And then you just take things from a political angle and then everyone is like, yeah, but we all know the politicians don't serve with the money. It's the private sector. Or we all know that the private sector are the ones that, if it's the concept that you have to look at is the concept of private property, protection.
Yep. They're the ones with a lot of, a lot to lose. The guy in office, the worst thing that he could lose is, one, his life, second, his job.
Yeah.
Now, the private sector has a lot of property, especially property to lose.
Yeah.
And not just the properties at home, but globally. Now, picture it this way. Let's look at it from Jeffrey Sachs' point of view. That the men and women that find themselves in Congress don't get there by Thanos snapping his finger and then they find themselves in Congress.
Well,
no.
Well, there is a little bit of, witchcraft taking place there. Usually it's untaxable witchcraft.
There is that untaxable witchcraft. I get it. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
The people that are funding your campaign are actually the ones that have the real power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which come from the private sector.
Again, private sector. So, now, how is this going to impact me? Let's now wrap it up with the individual impact. Mm. Because it's going to, we saw that from the beginning. The tariffs will impact an individual consumer because we are most likely to see an increase in the rise of the cost of living.
because the product prices on the shelves, the prices are going to go through the roof because of the whole tariff thing.
Exactly.
Because the company that's providing you with that product, they have two choices. It's either they have to get out of business, which is not going to be a choice for a lot of companies that, you know, as soon as the chances of them being, the chances of them staying afloat are still visible. Mm. Option one, get out of business. Option number two, increase the prices so you can stay into business. Now, the easy way of, the easy way of looking at this is to look at it in a way that, ironic enough, I can't believe I'm referencing Ronald Reagan, but he, he's explaining inflation that, more often consumers like you and I, you are excused from this one.
Why am I excused?
Consumers like yours truly here that don't understand economics.
Okay.
Every time there is a take, for example, inflation that leads to a product price increasing, we blame the shop owner.
Yeah.
You go to your home shop, as we know them, now in a lot of locations these days. You go there today and find that the bread is $15. You go back tomorrow and find that the bread is $20. Then you start saying, this lady is very expensive. Well, here's the thing. There's one that just, that happens sometimes. But the second thing is, it's what you and I call trickle down cost. The company that's providing you with a service or product, if they take, for example, their high tariffs, like the same, at the rate that Donald Trump is throwing them around today, if they do not factor that in the product of that price, they are not going to stay in business. Mm. So if they don't stay in business, you don't have the product anyway. So the only choice is to increase the product price so you can, even though you are scratching your head when you are buying it, at least you are buying the product. At least you have access to the product. So in other words...
But if the product becomes so inaccessible...
So expensive,
yeah,
you can't buy it, so you don't have the product anyway.
Exactly.
So in other words, when it comes to inflation, both you, the end consumer, and the business that's providing you the product, you are both victims.
Yep, you are. The downside is also you're victims of a billionaire and his billionaire cabinet.
Yeah.
Now, this has been some of the weird things on the... Yeah? You wanted to say something?
Is it too late to say that Africa is crushing the global economy?
Crushing how?
Because of Trump's cabinet is... There are a lot of Africans in there. So...
Yes. Well...
In a way, the same way they
one is there for the digital transformation through cryptocurrency.
Oh dear.
The other one is there to ensure government efficiency. That's most the richest man in the world.
Uh-huh.
And the third one is there as another particular sort of like e-governance sort of like implementer in a scenario.
How's that working?
I don't know because they've not featured as much. However. Don't worry about that because those particular things have got to be that are impacting America internally.
Uh-huh.
So in a sense that if the trade connects to what those three South Africans are doing, because it's technically four, I forgot what the fourth one is doing. If the trade component, which is between countries, has to reach what they are doing, that is only a scenario in terms of whether, they have a direct impact on, let's say, legislation and policy making.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so far, Trump has been using executive orders. That's most where everything comes from.
Yeah, more like a,
executive orders.
Shortcut.
That he has them, that was given to the presidency.
Yeah.
In the same oh my goodness.
I know, right? The deregulation went savage on that.
Literally during the, and he uses the Illegal Aliens Act scenario from 17 something. Which is based upon when America is in a wartime scenario, and you have to define how is America at war with Mexico.
They have to declare a state of emergency before.
Yeah. So he has to declare that there's a war between one country and another. But the thing is, how do you designate that the cartels from Mexico are a country?
Easy. All you just have to do is...
No. If you use that act, that 1738 act, it's most a wartime act. aye, that 17 something, 1785 Act. It was a wartime act. It literally says, if you are at war with another country, not if you are at war with an organization.
Okay, but you and I know that the Americans will go to war with anything. Yeah. They went to war with, they went to war on drugs, went to war on terror.
They had to withdraw from Afghanistan because the Russians even warned them, don't invade Afghanistan. The British.
We are talking from experience. You are never going to win.
The British didn't learn from their particular, because the British also couldn't invade Afghanistan.
Yeah, yeah, they tried.
They tried it, and then they...
Okay, look, most of these guys that have tried to invade Afghanistan, which is a desert country, they are those guys that need sunscreen. I see why they keep losing, but... Okay, now we have to go.
Just there, you know, we were on a serious note, and then just there, you throw us...
Man, we really did hold it on.
You threw us into the pool. But yeah, at least, you know, we kept a straight face going for the whole hour and a half.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're actually right, because the concern here has been, which is now back to what Lavrov said in this Antalya Diplomacy Forum, has literally been, multipolarity has never been respected, specifically from the American and...
The guys that have been proposing
and
it.
And the NATO discussion, who literally brought in the thing, and which has been the big problem regarding, remember our discussion on the UN Security Council reform?
Yeah.
The reformation discussion? Now, the Africans are the ones showing up, yeah, you guys are making decisions about us.
Without us.
So we want to sit at the table. And then the Russians are saying, listen, don't just shout, don't just listen to one continent. Listen to all the other continents.
Caribbeans, Asia.
Caribbean, South America, the other Asian countries. Yes, Africa. Middle Asia or Central Asia, which is here where Kazakhstan them are and Azerbaijan them are and Georgia is. Central Asia. Listen to everyone so that you can see how you can get that multiple view, multiple voice into this forum.
Okay, but this is what I was talking about in the morning. Empires have never been about spreading anything. They've been about every method they come up with is about control.
Divide and control.
Yeah, divide and control. That's it. They like to disguise it in a lot of, in a lot of camouflage, but the goal have been control. The British scoured the whole, invaded the entire planet in the name of civilizing. But what was the main goal? Control. It's not rocket. Well, the US have scoured the whole world, bombing democracy into pretty much everyone that disagrees with their way of doing things. So, which is why Linda Thomas Greenfield, the former UN, UN ambassador, pointed out that, look, we can't give you a seat at the table with veto power. Otherwise, the whole structure will crumble. Because, well, now it will be very difficult to invade any country when you have to seek vote from more than five guys. Now, 11 minutes into business and economic segment, team business and economic segment is here. Now,
we've been appropriating their minutes. Don't worry. I feel good.
Yeah.
Partially. Yeah, with the pain that's being exerted on me. But yeah.
Yeah. You're having your own private Abu Ghraib.
Yeah. It is literally an Abu Ghraib.
Yeah. Until tomorrow.
Until tomorrow, guys. Let's see each other again. Same time, same place.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.